from WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
Hi, who's this?
This is Joe calling from Post Falls, Idaho. I'm 16 years old, and I've got a serious problem with onions.
Okay, tell me about it.
Well, ever since I was way younger, I've completely detested onions. I mean, just hated them, but my mom's always been cooking for a bunch of other kids, so it's she doesn't want to cook anything separate without them, so I was always kind of force-fed them, and she always said that, you know, you'll like them when you get older, you'll appreciate them when you get older. And as I started getting older, I started to panic, just thinking, oh, shoot, I still hate onions. And it, you know, it was like one of those things, like, I'm supposed to grow out of this. What's happening here? And my mom's an excellent cook. I mean, she makes this meatloaf with, you know, like the ketchup on it and the bacon, and then you slice into it, and it's just these onions, big old onion slices, and it's like, oh, and it just ruins any dish for me, and I've just always hated it.
How many siblings do you have?
I've got seven.
Seven siblings?
Three sisters and four brothers. So mom cooks on a pretty big scale.
Where are you in the eight?
I'm the oldest.
Okay. Oh, I see. All right. And all seven of the other siblings like onions?
Yeah, mostly. They just find them tolerable. You know, it's like lettuce.
And is there any format in which you like onions a little bit, or it's just 100% no matter what?
Well, I actually kind of appreciate the really teeny chopped sweet onions, like on a hamburger or something. But I don't think that even really counts, you know?
I think that does count, first of all, Joe.
Okay.
I don't think you should be so hard on yourself. When your mom puts the onions into the meatloaf, does she cook them first, or does she put them in raw?
She puts them in raw.
Mmm. Joe, I want to say a few things to you. First of all, I sense that you're getting a little bit worried that you may be plagued by this issue for life, because you feel like you're 16 and you should be growing out of this by now. And I don't think you should be so hard on yourself. Like me, I did not like tomatoes well into my 20s. Now I can't wait for summertime tomato season to roll around and go to the farmer's market and get great tomatoes, and I'll slice a big, thick slice of tomato and sprinkle salt on it and eat it with a fork and knife like it's a steak. So give yourself some time. But I understand that right now you're in a predicament. You need to get through these meals in a way that doesn't inconvenience your mom too much.
Oh, yeah. My sister's always said, I mean, how do you expect to ever find a wife that's going to cook without onions? And that's a bleak future right there. I mean, I can't imagine that, you know?
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen to you, Joe. But one thing I will say is that, look, you can tell your mom, if it's not too much trouble to her, there's a couple things she could do to help you out. The best would be to cook the onions in advance before putting them into other dishes.
Really?
Yes, that will soften them and sweeten them and make their flavor milder. But if she doesn't have time to do that, and I certainly understand if she doesn't, if she even just chops up the onion and then soaks it in cold water for 15 minutes and then puts it in, that will also help to soften and take out some of the sharpness of the flavor of the onion.
Right, okay.
Separately, I want you to take charge a little bit in the kitchen when your mom's not in there trying to do stuff. I want you to move on to caramelization. I want you to Google it, caramelized onions, and I want you to cook onions that way. So, Joe, I want you to try all of these different techniques, and I want you to report back. Will you report back and tell me how your onion therapy is going?
I definitely will, Dan.
All right, Joe. Well, thanks so much for your call.
All right, thanks so much, man.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and we're about to challenge your assumptions about consumption and drop a sporkful of knowledge on you. Because we're obsessively compulsive about eating more awesomely, and because if history has taught us anything, it's that the hosts of food shows need a lot of catchphrases. Let's go ahead and jump into today's topic for mastication and rumination, which is Weird Al, The Sporkful Interview. Well, friends, I am extremely excited to bring this show to you today. I've been a fan of Weird Al's for a long, long time. He's written so many great songs about food. I had the privilege of sitting down with him in person backstage before a recent concert. Al has his second children's book coming out on June 25th. It's called My New Teacher and Me. It's available for pre-order now. I will link to it at sporkful.com. We talked a bit about the book, but we talked mostly about eating, as we do here on The Sporkful. And basically what I wanted to do is to use the many, many songs Al's written about food, so many of his parody songs reference food, to use those as sort of chapter headings or jumping off points to talk about the food issues that are referenced in those songs. So that's what we did. It was a great time, and here's the interview. Your new children's book is entitled My New Teacher and Me, and it really encourages kids to follow their dreams and also, in a way, to question authority, I think, which is kind of cool. And this is your second children's book. I'm curious to hear you compare the creative process between writing one of these books and writing the music that you write.
It's a similar process in a way. You know, I've been writing verse for, you know, a few decades, and it's a form that I'm pretty familiar with. So in a sense, it was like writing sort of a long song that I didn't have to write the music for.
Right. And you know, I want to talk about the book a little more, but I want to kind of try to connect it to your music. And, you know, your music continues to find audiences with new generations of, as you put it in other interviews, 15-year-old boys, although I think that's kind of selling yourself short, really with people in their formative years is how I would put it. What I find amazing is that, you know, a lot of the music that I listened to when I was in my formative years, I look back now, it's a punchline. Your music, I don't think of that way. And I think that most people don't think of it that way. They have a real earnest attachment to it that stays with them. And I think it's especially interesting because so much of your music is ironic, and yet there's a very pure and earnest attachment that people have to it. And I'm curious if you have any theory as to what it is about you or your music that makes that connection possible.
I think that at a certain age, in your formative years, as you put it, you're more open to this kind of humor, this kind of questioning authority, irreverence. I remember when I was maybe 13 years old, I was crazy about Mad Magazine. I would go to used bookstores and try to find back issues, and it was really like a major driving force in my life, and I was obsessed with it. And I still enjoy Mad Magazine, but not as much as I did when I was that old. And it's kind of telling because, you know, I've got a fan base that extends generations, but I think my hardest core fans are, you know, still the formative years people. In fact, if you ask most people that are, you know, older, like what their favorite Weird Al album is, almost without fail, it's the one that they heard when they were that age. It's like it really made an attachment with them somehow. So there's a nostalgia that happens with my older catalog.
I have a theory I'd like to run by you that sort of connects to your book, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it, which is that so much of childhood and growing up is about learning all these rules. And so much about parenting is just teaching all these, everything from like, don't eat that, you know, eat this, don't eat that, don't cross the street now, wait till that thing happens. And you're constantly having to learn these rules and abide by them, and it makes the world a really confusing and weird place when you're young because a lot of the rules don't make sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that people who connect, artists and creative people who connect with people in their formative years, depict the world as young people see it. It's a weird, messed up world that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I love Maurice Sendak's books.
Sure.
And I think that that's something that your music and your book both do. I'm curious how you feel about that, or if that is something you strive for.
Yeah, I mean, it's not overt. I mean, I'm not ostensibly trying to do that, but I mean, it's all in the going towards some kind of comedic release. It's an absurd world sometimes. And again, you know, the whole questioning authority thing, which what Mad Magazine did so well. I mean, everything from Madison Avenue to politicians and saying that these grown-ups are not necessarily always telling you guys the truth, and that's an important thing to learn when you're young.
Right. So as we segue from your work to our discussion of food, I have a polka and food-related question for you.
Okay.
I'm sure you're familiar with the classic song, Beer Barrel Polka.
Of course.
In that it has the lyrics, roll out the barrel, we'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out the barrel, we've got the blues on the run. Zing, boom, tararol, sing out a song of good cheer. What does tararol mean?
I wasn't sure that it was, I've heard tarara.
Right.
And some people say tararol.
Okay.
You know, it depends on your translation of it. And I'm not sure what the literal translation of tarara or tararol would be, but now that you brought it up, that's something I should look into.
Do you know what language it was being translated from?
I don't even know that. I feel so bad. I mean, that's like such a, you know, such a seminal polka piece. I think I'd know a little bit of the background of it.
Well, don't feel too bad because I did Google this before.
Okay, well, you can tell me that.
I did not find anything definitive. I mean, I ended up at Yahoo Answers, which is, you know, makes Wikipedia look like the Library of Congress.
Uh-huh.
And someone there wrote that the song was first sung in the English version from a Polish translation, and this person admitted that it was a guess. 1939, Poland was invaded by Germany, and Zing Boom Tararol is related to the sounds of war, i.e. bullets surrounding an unflappable group of people who won't have their life change without celebration.
Interesting. You know, my wife is part Polish, so maybe I'll go home and ask her what tararol means.
Okay. All right. See if you can find out about that. You can tweet me the answer.
Okay, will do.
So let's segue full-fledged to food here. You are a vegetarian, have been for about 20 years.
Something
though, right?
Like that, yeah.
And even went through a vegan period.
Yeah, I mean, I still consider myself a sort of vegan. I mean, I'm a vegan, but I cheat, on it, you know, because, you know, you got the cheese pizza on the bus, and yeah, it's hard not to sneak a piece every now and then.
Right. And I know you've moved away in your songwriting a little bit from the food songs, but I'd like to use some of those songs as jumping off points.
Sure, of course.
For us to just talk about food. And we'll kind of go, not necessarily in chronological order here. Some of these will be rapid fire.
Okay.
We can go in more detail. But let's start at the beginning. My Bologna.
Ooh, my little hungry one, open up a package of my bologna. Ooh, I think the toast is done, the toast is done. Diving with a little of my bologna.
When you're not trying to rhyme with Sharona, do you say bologna or bologna?
Well, I used to always say bologna. But it's spelled Bologna, and, you know, I certainly worked with Sharona, and because of my song, I have since then always said Bologna.
Really? So the song changed
you? The song changed me, yes.
All right, well, I looked it up in the dictionary. Either pronunciation is technically acceptable.
Yes, yes.
The white stuff.
You can see him in my teeth, head when I talk, head so made in my pancreas, just when in a shock.
Do you eat Oreos?
On occasion. I mean, you know, not often. I don't even know. Are they vegan? I'm not sure if the white stuff actually is.
I think, I'm not sure about vegan. My wife was raised in a kosher household, and I know that they took the, I think it was gelatin or whatever pork product used to
right.
be in there. So I think they are vegetarian.
Okay.
But they may not be vegan.
Right. Yeah, you know, on occasion I do, but I can't say it's a current, you know, it's not a right. big part of my diet.
When you do eat them, what's your strategy?
Well, you know, a kid will eat the middle of the Oreo first
right.
and save the chocolate cookie outside for last.
Okay.
Myself, usually I'll either put the whole thing in my mouth or I'll eat one of the cookies first and then eat the cream and second cookie second.
When you do the cream and second cookie, which side is up?
The cream. I'm not a monster.
I would actually argue the other way, Al. I think you should put the cream side
down.
So it's
like a surprise, so you don't know like what you're getting?
No, so that the cream is on your tongue, and it accentuates the cream flavor.
Wow. Well, that's another way to look at it.
See, I aspire to be the weird Al of food.
Yeah.
Crazy as anything you would sing about.
Yeah. No, I'll have to try that sometime.
Okay.
That could be a whole different sensation.
It's big. What do you think, if you were designing a new Oreo with pure ingredients, one that you could eat all the time and feel good about, what ratio would you choose between the cookies and the filling?
Well, I think the quintuple stuff would be good, you know, because I don't think they've done that yet.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, like an entire pack of Oreos, there's only got like two cookies, and the rest is just stuff between them.
Right. That would be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I stumbled upon some of these sort of fancy bakery imitation Oreos that were really good. They had, I would say, 1.5:1 cookie to filling ratio.
Did that work for you?
And that was really nice. Each cookie, I would say, was like 0.75.
Uh-huh.
Is adding up to 1.5:1.
There's a burger chain. I won't mention the name of them, but they make artisanal ding dongs. It's probably actually much better for you than the actual ding dong. But again, it's the whole nostalgia thing. It's like it's not the ding dong you grew up with. So
right. Yeah, there is something. There's a certain sort of like hyper processed umami thing that happens.
Exactly.
That you just can't replace.
Exactly.
Moving on. I love Rocky Road.
Yeah, the chocolate's getting old. Vanilla just leaves me cold. There's just one flavor good enough for me. Yeah, me. Don't give me no crummy teaspoon. I know what I need. Baby, I love Rocky Road. So won't you go and buy half a gallon, baby? I love Rocky Road.
Chocolate's getting old. Vanilla just leaves me cold. Do you stand by those lyrics today?
No, I never, you know, and not every lyric that I write is autobiographical.
Right.
In fact, I like Rocky Road. I wouldn't go so far as to say that I love it.
It's not as good of a lyric, though, right?
I don't think I've actually had Rocky Road ice cream since 1982, because that's, or 83 was when the song came out. And as part of the promotion for that song, I had to participate in so many Rocky Road ice cream eating contests that I think I've gotten my lifetime's share of Rocky Road ice cream.
Right. So if you are more open to chocolate and vanilla than you say, which would you have a preference between the two?
It depends how it's made. Like, really good vanilla is great, and really good chocolate is great. So it kind of depends. But between the two, I generally say chocolate because I always, as a kid, I know this is not the case now, but as a kid, I always thought that vanilla was like plain ice cream. It's like clear. Right. It's like it's like ice cream without any flavor. It's like, why would anybody order vanilla? It's like no flavor.
Do you have a cup or cone preference?
I generally go cone with a sugar cone. Because it's extra. With a cup, you can't eat the cup. Right. But with a cone, you get a cone.
Right, right. I want to move on to grapefruit diet.
Fudge and Twinkies and deviled ham. Who's real flabby? Yes, I am. Every picture of me's got to be an aerial view. Now my doctor tells me there's just one thing. Diet. Throw out the pizza and beer. Grapefruit diet.
Do you like grapefruit? Do you eat it?
I do. I eat it particularly. I usually only eat it when I'm on a diet because when I'm trying to lose weight, I'll eat like half a Red Ruby grapefruit every morning for the entire length of the diet. And I like it, but it really kind of, you know, in my brain it now it means like diet. So when I'm not on a diet, I generally don't eat it.
So was Grapefruit Diet one of the more autobiographical songs?
You know, I think I read that song before I ever tried that as a dietary technique. But then I read a book saying, well, it wasn't the grapefruit diet book, but it was just saying that grapefruit was a great breakfast if you wanted to try to lose weight. So,
right.
And it seemed to work.
What's your grapefruit eating strategy? Do you use a spoon to scoop out the half wedges?
I do. I actually have a grapefruit spoon somewhere, but I usually don't bother trying to find it. So it's just a matter of digging out each segment and eating segment by segment. And then when it's all done, I take the half grapefruit and I walk over the sink and I squeeze the rest into my mouth.
Interesting. That's an interesting move there. That's you don't squeeze it into a glass?
No.
Okay.
No. Then I have to wash the glass. That's the point of that.
What is a grapefruit spoon? What does it look like?
It's got a serrated edge. It's like a small, thin spoon that's got kind of a jagged edge on one side, so it helps you cut out the sections better.
I noticed that a lot of your songs about food, which I understand are not all autobiographical, but they're written from the point of view of someone who eats a lot of very decadent, very unhealthy food. And I'm sure that there's obviously comedic potential in that, so I understand that. But I wonder if, because you're very thoughtful about what you eat, I wonder if you ever use your music to pig out vicariously.
I never really thought of that way. When I wrote Grapefruit Diet, that was sort of my sequel to Fat in a way, because it's like after he becomes morbidly obese, well, I better drop a few pounds.
Right.
So I got to include whatever fat jokes I didn't get the first time around.
The outtakes.
Right.
Lasagna. I think that you may have unwittingly agreed with my opinion about lasagna when you wrote that song, because a lot of the lyrics are sort of like, you should eat my lasagna, or if you don't like that, try these other foods. I think that lasagna is a severely overrated food. I think that it's a ton of work to make it. Separating those strips is a giant pain in the butt.
For the longest time, my road manager had a thing, and the writer saying that no lasagna backstage.
Really?
Because I didn't know this, but apparently lasagna is very cheap to make. Apparently, so a lot of promoters are like, I'll give them lasagna, and then you wind up eating lasagna five times a week. So you know, I like lasagna, but that was off the writer for a long time.
Okay, but so you don't quite share my disdain for it.
For lasagna, I like it okay. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's overrated, but I think it's rated just fine.
I kind of feel like, okay, someone's going to make you lasagna, and their time wouldn't be better spent doing something else for the world.
Like paint my house.
Right, exactly. and give me what I think is basically the same thing, which is baked ziti.
Okay, there you
it's
go.
It's the same thing, except it doesn't require the fine
right.
detail of the layering of the ingredients, which is so time-consuming and tedious.
Right, so make me some baked ziti and give me a back rub.
Exactly.
There you go.
Now, which would you rather have, Al? Baked ziti and a back rub or lasagna?
Well, I'd rather somebody give me a back rub using the baked ziti. That'd feel pretty good.
Would you rather have a back rub with baked ziti or lasagna?
Oh, that's a tough one. That's really tough. I might go with the lasagna.
Really?
Yeah.
Actually, I guess for a back rub, that might be better. Because you can kind of drape the long strands
yes,
of pasta
yeah,
over
yeah,
your
yeah.
back. It's sort of almost like a massage towel of sorts.
That's what I was
visualizing. The ziti would all fall off.
Right, right.
It's not good massage food. I think that's a great point. the Rye or the Kaiser?
Try the Rye or the Kaiser. They're on special tonight. If you want, you can have an appetizer. You might like our salami, and the liver's all right. And they'd really go well with the Rye or the Kaiser.
Do you have a preference between the two? Which would you use in which situation?
Well, rye certainly, if you're doing any kind of patty melt situation. I'm a kind of a rye fan. I don't have anything against Kaiser, but I'm a rye fan from way back.
Okay, all right. My wife is a huge rye person, so we always have a lot of rye in our house. But we have a bit of a dispute. Maybe you can actually take sides in this, which I'm sure you're eager to do. I know that it's more convenient to get the bread sliced. Let's say you're getting rye bread fresh at a bakery.
Uh-huh.
They get the machine, they'll slice it for you.
Right.
The slices are very thin. I love a rye bread unsliced so that you can slice the slices thicker than the machine can even do.
Mm.
You get them 3/4 of an inch to an inch thick, like a grilled cheese on thick cut rye bread.
Oh, that sounds good.
Because then you get different strata within the bread. You get a crispy exterior. You get a soft, fluffy interior. And the other nice thing about getting it unsliced is that you can have different thickness of slices for different situations. So let's say you want one sandwich. You feel like having it be extra thick or thinner.
Right.
You can adjust that on a per sandwich basis.
Well, I can understand that, but you know, they say it's the best thing since sliced bread for a reason, because sliced bread is awesome.
I don't agree. I think it's overrated. I think that the worst thing since sliced bread could be sliced bread.
That might be true as well. No, I don't know. I mean, obviously, if you're looking for an extra large slice of rye bread, a sliced bread wouldn't be your option. But I'd say in like 87% of the cases, sliced bread works just fine for me.
Okay. All right. I mean, I'll respectfully disagree.
Okay.
I mean, I
don't know how respectful you're being right now, actually.
I guess I can't disagree with what works best for you, because you know that better than I do. But I would encourage people to get bread unsliced. The other thing is that when you get it unsliced, it stays fresh for longer. I'll put the whole loaf in the freezer, take it out. You can barely let it defrost a tiny bit. Saw off a frozen slice, then let that defrost. And it will, because you're exposing less of the bread
to air.
That
sounds like a lot of work. I think you get a slice, then you eat it very quickly.
In one of your more recent songs, Whatever You Like, you name check a lot of cheap foods. And among other cheap goods. What are some of your guilty pleasures, food guilty pleasures?
Oh, I love tater tots. Those are amazing. I've always loved those. I never went through my ramen stage in college so much. I mean, it's okay, but not one of my faves. You know what I love is like the cheap, cheap macaroni and cheese.
Do you add anything to it or do anything to it different from the box instructions?
I you know, I'm a rule follower, so I pretty much follow the box instructions. You know, I'm one of these kind of cooks that, you know, it's all got to be scientific. Like, I'm not like, oh, put a little of this and a little of that. And well, exactly how many grains of salt? Exactly. Yeah.
What happened to questioning authority, Al?
Well, you know, I go the different way in the kitchen.
So it's okay to upend society's cruel conventions, except in the kitchen.
That's exactly right.
All right, now we're getting into the big guns here. Eat it.
Don't you tell me you're full.
Have some more chicken, have some more pie. It doesn't matter if boiled or fried. I have to take issue with that lyric. I think it does matter.
If the boiled. Pie is fried?
Well, I mean, fried pie. You must have had, have you had fried pie?
I don't think I have.
Oh, it's so good.
Really?
I mean,
anything fried. Anything fried on a stick.
Right, exactly. You know, and boiled pie is not going to be very good. So that one is an easy one. I mean, boiled chicken versus fried chicken also.
Well, I think the protagonist in this song is just saying, like, I don't care if it's boiled or fried. It is your obligation to eat this,
right, whether
it tastes good or not.
But in that lyric, do boiled and fried apply both to the chicken and the pie?
It's whatever you want it to be. I left it vague on purpose so you can put your own meaning onto it.
Okay. Fat.
Your butt is wide. Well, mine is too. Just watch your mouth, or I'll sit on you. The word is out, better treat me right. Cause I'm the king
of cellulite. Ham on.
In fat. Ham on whole wheat. All right. In the fat video, when you sing that lyric, you take a bite out of a ham sandwich, and then there's a cut, and then you kind of toss it. You don't really see you taking a bite. I believe that video was shot before you became a vegetarian.
Uh-huh.
Was it a real ham sandwich, and did you take a bite of it?
That's an excellent question. I honestly don't remember. I'm sure I took a bite of it. Yeah, I mean, I have to method act. And it very well could have been a ham on whole wheat. Let's say that it was.
Okay, all right, we'll go with that.
All right.
But in theory, at that point in your life,
I could have. Okay. I could have feasibly been actually eating a ham on whole wheat.
Well, Weird Al Yankovic, the new children's book is My New Teacher and Me. It comes out June 25th. It's available for pre-order right now. I will link to it at sporkful.com. Al is also on tour until early August. Find his tour dates and more at weirdal.com. Al, I've been a huge fan of music for so long. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you
so much.
Hello.
Joe, it's Dan Pashman from The Sporkful. How you doing?
Pretty good, buddy. How's it going?
Good. Now, at the start of this show, listeners heard our last conversation, which actually was recorded about 3 months ago. Now, here we are in the present day, and I'm calling to check up on you. How are you doing with the onions?
Actually, just great. I had the meatloaf again last night, and we tried soaking the onions, and it worked great. It was so much better. I actually I had seconds, and it was great.
So soaking the onions in the cold water really helped?
Yeah, it took the nasty kind of skunky onion taste out of it.
All right, great. Have you done any other experiments?
Yeah, actually, a couple weeks ago, my mom said she was making chicken on the grill, and they usually have caramelized onions with that. And I said, oh, great, this is just what Dan wanted me to do. She made these great chicken breasts, smothered them with this cheese sauce and bacon, grilled. It was so good. And half of my chicken breast, I put the caramelized onions on it, and it was great. It was completely fantastic, and I ate it leftover again a couple nights later.
Wow, so this is a big breakthrough here. You know, a few months ago, Joe, you were worried about living a life alone, no wife, no onions, no nothing. And now, you know, you're well on your way.
Yeah, it's been a huge help.
And what does your mom have to say about all this?
She's actually been treating it kind of like a joke. She thought it was pretty funny that I had to call into a radio station to talk about onions. But, She's been helping out a lot, actually. She's kind of been enjoying it. She's, you know, slipping it into food that we usually don't have it in. She made mashed potatoes a few weeks ago, and halfway through I said, "You put onions in this, didn't you?" And she said, "Yeah." She was sneaking onions into the mashed potatoes.
Well, Joe, I'm so glad to hear that you're on the path to onion righteousness. Thanks so much for your call. Take care.
All right, thanks, Dan.
All right, friends, that just about does it for this show. Remember that you, too, can be a caller on The Sporkful if you have an innovation, a rant, a problem, an issue for me to resolve, a dispute with a loved one. Give me a ring at 908-9-SPORK-9. You can also drop me a line in the old emails, dan@sporkful.com. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.